Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Voices of the Earth, coming to you on the Art of Living Well Radio Network, and that a part of Blog Talk Radio, as you just heard, our recorded British-accented announcer. So I'd love to know her name sometime. She at the end of the hour, after I've bid goodnight to everybody and make sure the recording is about ready to start, I get thanked by this same lovely woman, and I usually say thank you to her and wish her a good night, even though she clearly isn't hearing me. But it's a lot of fun. So I am your host, Carol Omart Behan, coming to you tonight, March 11th, 2015. From my country studio, and it is a total delight to tell you that I am looking out the window this time for the first time since the beginning of this year at a, well, still winter landscape, but there's light in the sky and warmth in the air. And if you're a person listening live or shortly hereafter as podcast, I am thinking and hoping that you had an equally lovely day. It seems that winter is going to loosen its grip 1 week shy of the vernal equinox. So it is a delight to welcome you here to the show tonight. We're in Women's History Month, and my guest tonight will be speaking about a particularly important woman in the history of women's suffrage, Matilda Jocelyn Gage. The writer of this book about her, quoting Matilda, is Susan Savion, and she will be joining me soon. Let me tell you, though, welcoming new listeners and either live, and I believe we have an audience out there tonight, remembering that it's 7 o'clock Eastern or whatever part of your time zone in the U.S., and you're tuning in. Welcome to you. Welcome to any new listeners via podcast. Voices of the Earth, a program that I was called to create, 10 months ago now, coming up on the first anniversary in May. The heart of Voices of the Earth is this to me. I believe it is through sharing the stories of our Earth journeys that we are celebrating and reweaving the living web of Gaia, our beautiful Earth home. The guests that have joined me on Wednesdays since last May have brought such wonderful stories of what they are doing, their enthusiasms and passions in the world. And tonight's guest, Sue, is just the same, a passionate person telling about a voice that was part of the women's suffrage movement. We will soon get to hearing all about that, but just a little bit more telling you about the show, how it is you might find out more, listen to past shows, and it is this. There is an archive of these shows on my website where you will find out more about me, a teacher of Earth wisdom through Labyrinth and Sacred Pilgrimage, and the website is goldenspiraljourney.com. When you go to that site, and I invite you to do so and to have a look around, you will see right on the home page the link to the archives of Voices of the Earth. There you can check back through any of those shows. You click on any of those highlighted links. We'll bring you to a page to tell you a little bit in encapsulated form about who that guest was, and oftentimes a nice set of slides in the slideshow to show you even more. So do enjoy your look at that. For those of you listening to Sue and myself live tonight, it is a call-in radio show. And that number, and we're going to take calls about halfway through the hour, inviting your comments or questions at this number, which, if you're listening live, I hope is somewhere right in front of you there on that page. It is 805-292-0349. I'll remind you of this later in the show. All right, let me shuffle a few things around here. And I see that there is a person who's joined us listening to the show perhaps and maybe later on wanting to join us for a conversation. So we will invite that person on later on. Let me give you a little background on Susan Savion. Sue has been a teacher. She has for many years, and I think she's still connected with schools. She can tell us about that. She was a reading specialist. She worked as a gymnastics judge for a decade with all of that graceful sport that is. She has, in those years, authored 4 teacher resource books, quotes to start the day, quotes to make history come alive, quotes to stretch your brain, and quotes to spark discussion. I am telling you, we're going to hear amazing quotes from this Matilda Jocelyn Gage in just a moment, and we'll hear how it is she made the transition from more educationally focused books to this one around Matilda Jocelyn Gage. So let me flip back here to where I need to welcome her to this show. She's speaking to us tonight from her home in the Syracuse, New York area, I think Fayetteville, but we will soon hear. Sue Savione, welcome to Voices of the Earth.
Hello, Carol. It's good to be here.
And are you having an equally wonderful, well, did you have an equally wonderful spring day, or almost spring day?
It was a busy day, and I learned a lot. I went to an Oasis class where a friend of mine actually impersonated Matilda today and gave a wonderful presentation as a living history person.
Oh, now Oasis, give us an explanation of that. I did see it in the bio, but people
Oasis
out there...
Oasis is where people, you have to be over 50 years old, so older people, and they just offer a wealth of classes of all kinds, history and music and exercise classes and art classes and foreign language classes, computer classes, lots of lecture things. I've been teaching there myself, and my specialty is goddess classes and trips to different countries that I've experienced and learned more about.
Oh, wow. I'm already hearing another possible program, so I'm making a quick note here. That is definitely wonderful. And this is for the benefit of people in the Central New York area. And I know you're speaking to us from your home. Do you live in Fayetteville?
No, I live next door to Fayetteville in DeWitt, in the Drumlin area, near SU, actually.
Yeah, okay. Well, it is, and in the snow belt, too. So we're all emerging from the winter, and it's wonderful to get to March, wonderful to have Women's History to celebrate. And I know if people think at all about Women's History, the two names that most readily come to mind, because they're the ones, if anything, we learned about in our high school history class, are Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton. So let us turn to the woman in question here, Matilda Jocelyn Gage. She was very much involved in all of that, but why don't we have, and ultimately we'll find out what attracted you to her, but let's talk about her as an historical figure maybe first. Tell us what you know and what you've come through study to know about her in her childhood and upbringing that relates in particular to what we're going to share tonight through your book. So what can you tell us about her in that historical framework?
Well, yes, I'd be glad to give you that background, and that very much formed her. She grew up in Cicero, New York, and her parents were quite outstanding people also, very much leaders in their community, especially with further thought. It was always a gathering place for the intellectuals and important people of the day. And she was the only child of Hezekiah and her mother, and as such was invited to always participate in these interesting gatherings there. She would ask questions and participate in their conversations. She was encouraged to think for herself, always think for herself and research for yourself. Don't just take anybody's word for anything. Her father tutored her at home because there weren't a lot of academic resources for her at the time. She learned anatomy and physiology and Greek from him. And also her father's home was part of the Underground Railroad. They were part of that abolitionist movement. And so that kind of social justice thinking was part of her upbringing as well.
Wow.
I have a quote to share with you about that, but while I'm finding that, let me just tell you that the quotes books that I wrote, one of the things I say about quotes is, an interesting quote is a spark to ignite your mind. And do you want me to tell you how I came about writing these books, or tell you a little bit more about...
Yeah, as a matter of fact, yes, and I saw, because I'm so enthused to hear more about Matilda. I wanted to mention them, of course, as I did, but thank you for prompting me to invite you now. Tell us more about how that all began for you, because I know from there it probably encouraged you to consider writing the book that's under discussion tonight. So, yes, give us the background on that, on those books.
The other four books that you mentioned are teacher resource books for middle school age children, and they consist of a quote on each page, followed by a bio of the author of the quote, and then interactive material for students to do. Mm-hmm. And when I had it published with Incentive Publications, which are a publishing company that works mainly with school work types of things, they went back and forth how to publish them. I had two big books of these, and they decided to break them down into the four books with these other titles that you mentioned. Well, mm-hmm. I taught thematically, so I would have whole chapters on Black history or Native American history or doing the right thing or on women's quotes. They condensed all my something like 28 women's quotes pages to one page that had that Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony shared. So later on, I decided, well, maybe I should just write a book of just women's quotes, and that could be my next project. So I started organizing that, and I asked Dr. Sally Roche Wagner if she had any quotes to share with me from Matilda Jocelyn Gage. I'd worked at the Gage Center as a volunteer sometimes, gone to their auctions and their nice teas and tours and such. And Sally is the person who, well, she was a leader in women's studies. She did her doctorate work on researching about Matilda Jocelyn Gage. Mm-hmm. Well, Sally gave me lots and lots and lots of quotes from Matilda, and all of them seemed wonderful to me. So I eventually decided, no, I'm not just going to put a quote or two from Matilda in a book. I'm going to write a quote just for her because she deserves it. And the world needs to learn about this amazing woman. So that's mm-hmm. how that came about.
My, that is terrific. And you've mentioned the Gage Center already, and I will prompt people who are hearing this, whether, again, they're listening to us now, in the moment, that I have given the website for the Matilda Jocelyn Gage Center. And you've already met, is Dr. Wagner, is she still the person who's overseeing that?
That transitioned last year. There's a new young lady, a delightful woman named Sarah Flick, who is now running the day-by-day operations of it, while Sally is getting finally to just go to writer's retreats and do other kinds of things.
I'm chuckling apart because with writing being part of what I do, and of course you too, I mean, how fabulous is that? And sometimes I think we get, oh, I know we do, we get so passionate about so many things, and then you just want to, you want to try to clone yourself or something, so to be able to be a part of it. So I'm really glad to hear that. And so I know we'll talk more about the center probably down the road, but that, the quick fact is that it's Matilda's childhood home, correct? Or maybe her home, her entire life. Just give us a little of that particular fact. It's her home, correct?
She lived there for over 40 years. She grew up in Cicero, and so did her future husband, Henry Gage. Uh-huh. And they lived there for a few years after they were married, then moved to Manlius, mm-hmm. which is a town next to Fayetteville, and then eventually moved to Fayetteville. Henry Gage ran a dry goods store, was a property owner. They spent the rest of their lives at this nice pillared building on the main street of Fayetteville.
Mm-hmm.
And which I have a little bit more about her father, too, that I wanted to share.
Let's go back and pick up a little of her life story here and see how it built to what she had became this. I'm going to use the word firebrand because it came to mind. It may be something that you agree with.
That's
or not.
That's a suitable word for her. Yeah.
Ah, good. I'll make a note. That's great. I'm just so enjoying learning more about her, as I told you before the show got started. So, yes, do go back to the influence here of her dad, or of her father, I should say. Maybe make it a little more proper. They were slightly a bit more proper than we are now.
Well, I'm going to do that by sharing my first quote from her and then tell you about her father. The book is divided into sections on women's rights and economics and marriage, reproductive rights, the Haudenosaunee, which are the Iroquois, on slavery, on the vote, on the separation of church and state, on religion, peace, death, age, civilization, education, ancestors, and freedom. So she has quotes on all of these topics. This first one
wow.
I'm reading is on women's rights. And she says, and powerfully speaking by then, although at first she was a very timid speaker, she learned, "Let all government cease from off the face of the earth if we cannot build up a government of equality. A rebel, how glorious the name sounds when applied to woman. Oh, rebellious woman, to you the world looks in hope. Upon you has fallen the glorious task of bringing liberty to the earth and all the inhabitants thereof." And that was from a document called Women Rebels. And Matilda did credit her father for her lifelong desire for justice and equality for all. Matilda was involved in the women's movement from 1852 until her death in 1898. And she researched the topic of governmental equality by researching libraries and archives for forgotten and suppressed material. It amazes me how much digging she must have done in old dusty libraries to dig up all that she did. And we'll talk about that probably more later. But and this was before Google, of course.
how true.
Yes. In fact, Elizabeth Cady Stanton said about her, she always had a knack of rummaging through old libraries, bringing more startling facts to light than any woman I ever knew.
My. And I know we'll be hearing what it is, the relation of those three in particular.
Yes.
I'm not sure if it was my word or I found it as I composed the text for what's here on the show's page, but I would call them a triumvirate. It may or may not have been the case, but they obviously
that is what they were referred to, the triumvirate.
Oh, okay. Ah.
Yes.
That is absolutely amazing. So now, let's see. So it's fabulous to know that in those times that a young woman, obviously, and you can well imagine the young women everywhere who were probably equally precocious or intelligent but did not have the advantage of the support of their parents, such as was the case. So,
well, in fact,
her
father fully expected her to be a doctor. That's what she wanted to become. And since they were well known in the community, and she was certainly this very bright child, they went to enroll her in a college that she could pursue medical studies, and she was denied entrance because she was a woman.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so she never
did
get to pursue that career.
Right, and I shouldn't even say it like I'm surprised, because it isn't like I don't remember knowing this or learning this. But cannot imagine her father's own feelings about that, and for that matter, her mother. Is it her father who was the biggest of, or the most, the most influential? Because you've mentioned him by name.
Influential, and did promote her a lot. And we know a little bit more about him, but she was actually very close to her mother, and she credits her mother for a lot of support as well. And she was an equally intelligent woman.
Yeah. Wow. And so the marriage happened with her, and is it Henry? Henry Gage?
Yes, and she was just barely, not quite 19 years old, a few weeks from being 19 when she married him. And had five children. One child died in infancy. She was pretty preoccupied with child rearing and helping Henry with the store and all the other usual activities. And her health was never really strong. So when I've read all the things she did and accomplished, and then know that she struggled with ill health at the same time, it really is quite amazing to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness, yes. And to hear, again, reading some of what's, just looking at the overview of your book and hearing what you're saying now, it is extraordinary, because I know one of the things we'll be hearing more about is the amazing amount of writing and writings that she did, and you'll be giving us a few more of the details. Before we lose time to do so, is this a good time to describe her connection with the Native Americans, the Iroquois, better known by their name, the Haudenosaunee? That's one of the things I'm most interested in learning more about. Is this a good point in your presentation to tell what that was, that influence, and et cetera? Or do you want to wait for it? I just want to make sure we include it.
I think this would be this would be fine to talk about it, because I know we wanted to get into that a little bit more, because it's a really fascinating piece and mm-hmm. very essential, I think, to understanding the whole women's movement. Actually, she and Stanton and somewhat Lucretia Mott did get to know the local Haudenosaunee women personally. They shared meals and events. I discovered that the local tribal news, their meetings in the log house were regularly reported in the Fayetteville newspaper. So there was quite a bit of contact going on. What she has said, Sally Roche Wagner has said about it, is that she had studied women's history for so many years and was blind to some of the obvious signs that the influence of these Haudenosaunee women is what prompted these women to get uppity and start demanding more rights.
Wow.
Because before that, it's assumed, well, it had to do with abolition and the black men getting the vote and all of that. And now they've come around to realizing that when they see these Native American women having all these rights on almost an equal par with the males, that they lived with the women having all the rights to her own children and to... Actually, the women are the ones that chose the next leaders, and it makes good sense. They're the ones that observe the children growing up and playing with each other and interacting with each other. Who best to choose the next chief and choose the next negotiator person and so on. So the fact that they were not dismissed as inferior and had all these rights, and marriage was through the matrilineal line, was very influential in converting a lot of these women to realizing that, hey, they've got all this. They've had it for centuries. And here we are, these women from the late 19th century having all these issues with not having our own property and a right under the law to be recognized, to sue anyone, and on and on.
Wow.
I'm trying to find, let me read this little section on the Haudenosaunee, and this is a quote from her also.
Mm-hmm.
She says, "The division of power between the sexes in this Indian republic, the Haudenosaunee," oh, and for our listeners, Haudenosaunee is what we usually refer to as the five tribes of the Iroquois, and later six tribes of Tuscarora. So this Indian Republic was nearly equal. In matters of government, its women exercised controlling power in peace and war. No sale of lands was valid without consent of the women, while the family relation among the Iroquois demonstrated women's superiority in power. In the home, the wife was absolute. If the Iroquois husband and wife separated, the wife took with her all the property she had brought. The children also accompanied the mother, whose right to them was recognized as supreme. Never was justice more perfect, never civilization higher. So she published a series of articles in the on the Iroquois in the New York Evening Post, actually. The
wow.
editor of the series wrote this about her. He said, "Mrs. Gage, with an exhibition of ardent devotion to the cause of women's rights, gives prominence to the fact that the power and importance of women were recognized by the allied tribes." Mm-hmm. I've got a lot more. I'm just trying to find where
sure.
it all is in my book, but maybe you would want to proceed with a question about that while I find it.
Okay, well, I'll tell you, excuse me, let me get a little sip of water myself here so this tickle doesn't become more bothersome. So anyway, quick sip.
Well, I can go on. I found something.
Okay, very good. And we do have,
yourself.
And in a moment now, I'm going to invite, if this person who's here in our queue would like to speak, but that'll be coming up, and I'll remind other listeners to us live tonight about the call-in. But now let's go back to what you found to share with us on this.
Well, yes,
this
and
so
I do want
to
get the point in.
Yeah.
That she was adopted by the Wolf Clan of the Haudenosaunee. And was given a Native American name, which translates as "she who holds the sky" or "sky carrier." Her Mohawk sisters told her that that was a suitable name for her. She had this quote to say that the Council of Indians at Onondaga Castle, in the center of the great Empire State, and the Convention of the Women of the Country at Washington in January, the one protesting against citizenship about to be forced upon them because with it would come further deprivation of their rights, the other demanding citizenship denied them in order to protect their rights, are two forcible commentaries upon our so-called Republican form of government. What was happening, and this was shortly after the Fugitive Slave Law and the Proclamation of Emancipation eventually, where black men were now freed and there was movements for them to have voting rights. And at the same time, they were trying to force the Native Americans who, I don't know how much the listeners know about the culture, but they are sovereign nations. And as such, if they were to become voters and citizens of the United States, they would lose their sovereign nation status. And it's interesting because I just read in the newspaper today that these same tribes, or not the tribes is the wrong word, I'm sorry, these same sovereign nations of the Oneida and the Onondaga and the Seneca and the Mohawk and the Cayuga were offered some money recently by the U.S. government, and they're mostly refusing to take it because mm-hmm. that would subject them to the strings that would be attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a point that Matilda made way back then.
Yeah. Wow. It is really, and one thing that I have spent, when I was living more in the central New York area, I had opportunity to be a part of groups out around Onondaga Lake to attempt to bring, manifest healing for that beautiful body of water, the Tree of Peace and all of that. And it's an inspirational, the whole of the area is inspirational. And hearing what you're saying here about them and then their influence to this white woman who they clearly admired, respected, and brought her in to their clan, it is really extraordinary. And of course, as we go further in this, I think what people might be asking is, and I know you're going to tell us, how is it that her voice got to be fairly dismissed? But that story is coming up. I'll tell you, Sue, that we are about halfway through the hour, and so there is a person who's been possibly just listening, but if you are calling from area code 315, I know you're hearing us, of course. If you would like to come on the air, what I need you to do in order for me to bring you on live is to press 1 on your phone. That does some magic thing in the background of this cyber radio studio that allows me to unmute your mic. So caller in area code 315, There we are. Okay, very good. Sue, so we're going to take a caller now. Is that so hopefully a good point for you?
Okay.
Very good. All right, caller, I am now unmuting your mic, and welcome. Whoops, there we go. And if you could begin by telling us your name. Welcome to the show.
My name is Julie.
Julie, you're a voice that's familiar. Welcome to the show.
Yes. Well, thank you. I really enjoyed your last show back a couple weeks ago that I was able to listen to, and I just find your topics amazing, and you are amazing, and so I didn't want to miss this evening. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Had you known much about this Matilda Jocelyn Gage person?
I did not. What I find interesting is that I have quite a bit of Indian in me, and I'm not quite sure exactly what let's put this way, what my brand is. But I've always found it very interesting to learn more about the Indian. So, no, I don't believe that I do know much about Matilda. But I find it
really
interesting.
Oh, it is. And to think of the time in which she lived. Do you have, and Sue, you may have a comment that's come through Julie's sharings at this point. Or, Julie, if you had a particular question, anything in particular about, and we appreciate so much your words of praise for what we're up to here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to mention that Matilda gave the Iroquois credit for the first conception of inherent rights, and this was we'll get to with the argument that she would use for the right to, mm-hmm. of women to vote, that it was natural law, an inherent right as citizens to have this. She also cited them for having a natural equality of condition and lauded them for the establishment of a civilized government upon the basis of that. In contrast, mm-hmm. and she wrote a whole book about this, the early church debated whether or not women even had a soul. Everything connected with women was held to be unclean. And she went deeply into her research about that.
Wow.
And I would like to hear your question, Julie.
I'm sorry, I really don't have a question. I just found this intriguing, and I wanted to join you ladies and learn.
It is wonderful, and it is up. Julie, have you ever been to, because I know you do live in central New York, have you been to Seneca Falls?
Yes,
To the women's, isn't that an amazing place?
It is.
Yeah.
Yes,
so, you know, listeners who will hear this down the road, you know, eventually, because as a podcast, it will remain available to people really time out of mind, and we look forward to people hearing it at some point. So, I know, of course, Sue's gone, and maybe obviously more than once, likely so. I certainly have. It is a place to make a pilgrimage to, I really think, for women to do that. So,
mm-hmm.
wow.
Well, I've heard recently that someone did the same thing I did. I have two daughters, and when they were about middle school age, that's what we did. One weekend, we took a trip to Seneca Falls and then experienced it together. And it's sort of mm-hmm. almost a rite of passage from mother to daughter to learn about this history. And as a teacher, I find, well, we've just been talking about the civil rights issues and Selma and all that, and with the Black Americans. But so many of the young ones do not know the history and the struggle that people went through to get the vote and to earn these rights, or not to earn them, they are inherent rights, actually. So Seneca Falls is a wonderful place to experience mm-hmm. that.
Absolutely. Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, Julie, it's been delightful to have you join us in conversation. I see that another person has phoned in. So.
Okay.
Thank you very much. And of course, you can continue to listen as you've been doing on the phone. And take care and enjoy the spring, which is finally coming.
Thank
so
you
good
very
night
much,
now.
Lady. Good night.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
So So, Sue, as long as we have been joined by another caller, I'd like to – oh, well, I see new caller, same area code, but 536. If you're calling with a comment or question, I do request you need to push press 1 on your keypad. It enables me to unmute your microphone. So, oh, there it is. Sorry. You know what they do, and I have this live little – studio page, and things get switched around sometimes. It's like, need a little director of operations. All right, inviting this lovely new caller on with us, and yes. Oh, there we are. If you could start by saying your name, welcome to the show.
Hi, my name is Cindy.
Hi, Cindy. Welcome to Voices of the Earth and Sue Savion's wonderful program.
Well, I thank you. This is a most interesting topic, and I have a couple. I'd like to hear Sue's thoughts on a couple things. It seems like this area in central New York, Sue mentioned about Seneca Falls and, of course, the Syracuse area. It was such a fertile area for reform, and I'm just wondering if Sue has some thoughts on why is this area was so receptive and ready to hear new ideas.
Good question. I do have some thoughts about that. I was born in southern Illinois near St. Louis, and I've lived in this area for about 25 years. And it's palpable to me almost, the energy here for new ideas. And I've taken classes at Oasis that learn all about the history of Syracuse and the many inventions that started here, the Oneida community and other experimental communities that were in this area, cars that were here, that tires and other things that were invented, but also a host of new ideas and governors and big plans. The women's history, of course, I talked about the relationship with the Haudenosaunee, but there's something almost intangible, like we're on some kind of power grid or something, I think, with all the new things that pop up around this area. I can't explain it totally, but I there's been other people just as curious and noticing this phenomena over and over. So it's not like imagination.
I live not too far from Seneca Falls, and it's very exciting to be living in this area, and also it's like kind of responsible. It's like, you know, gee, we got to make things happen, and so it's really I think people want to make things happen. And the other thing I appreciate your commenting on, Sue, is I know, and maybe you're going to get to this a little later, but I know that Matilda Joshua Engage was very, you know, much a part, as you mentioned, about the three Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton. But when she kind of got on the outs because of her more radical ideas, what did she do when she was not so engaged and wasn't as welcome with the other thinking of some of the other women? I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on that.
Yes, it's quite a dramatic story, actually. The focus that Susan B. Anthony had was narrowed to getting the vote. She wanted to do anything she could politically to achieve that. She and Matilda was head president of the National Women's Suffrage Association for at least 9 years and always held an executive position. But there was another organization that was more conservative, the American Women's Suffrage Association. So Anthony wanted to see if they could combine to increase their numbers, thinking that would help with getting the vote. And that really wasn't that successful. But Matilda's issues had to deal with these institutional things that were keeping women down, primarily the religious institutions that saw women as evil, as a source of sin, as something, well, through all the history, you know, be burned as witches, and sexual things very bad and negative, and could go on and on with that. But she decided to take on the church and their institution of keeping women subjugated by writing a book called Woman, Church, and State. So it was a combination of these factors where Anthony felt that it was necessary in her reflection about it to combine with this religious conservative group to increase their numbers, and they would need to sort of kick Gage to the side because she was seen too radical. Mm-hmm. In fact, the conservative groups even wanted to name Jesus as head of the U.S. government, write it into the Constitution, despite our history of separation of church and state. This was a very difficult time for Matilda because they had worked together, written together for over 4 years. She'd supported Anthony when she was arrested and went through her trial. She'd write speeches for her when she needed them. And eventually, towards the end of their lives, they did meet again and there was some reconciliation. But she didn't just sit back and do nothing. She started a more liberal organization to keep up the good fight for the issues that she cared about, because really Matilda felt strongly about every social justice issue. She felt they were all related. So she supported mm-hmm. prostitutes that had no other way of buying food for their children if they'd been deserted and couldn't get jobs or couldn't go to school. She supported abolition, which is another big thing in this central New York area, by the way, and her home had an underground railroad spot. And she also worked with, as I said, the Native Americans and on women that had been inventors and such. And she wrote a book about women as inventors that so many men had taken the credit for a lot of things that women had invented. But she had financial problems and couldn't really continue very much, and that's was sad.
Okay,
was
I think
support.
Yeah. Oh, no. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Oh, it's
thanks,
fabulous.
Cindy.
Absolutely. Yeah, and so Cindy, you want to make a response?
Well, I just really quickly, I was just wondering, was Matilda's husband supportive of everything she did?
Good question.
Yes, he was quietly in the background, and he had ill health also. But they both were of like mind about being abolitionists before they married, and he did support her. But he died a little bit early in their marriage, and she had the children and the dry goods store to carry on with. But I wondered about that a long time, too, so I was glad to finally get some answers about that.
Yeah, good. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Well, Cindy, thank you so much for your call and your input into our conversation, and I know you'll be hearing the rest of the show through. But, again, it was so lovely of you to phone in. So with that, I bid you a good evening.
Thank you. Bye.
You're welcome. Bye. And so, wow, I just loved how the conversation, I'm working here on muting your mic, Cindy. So there you go. All right, so still have Sue here, right? Yay.
Yes.
But we do have time for another call or two if you are so inspired, live listeners. It's 1-805-292-0349. And there it is. So we're back to just the two of us chatting away, and oh my gosh, we're going to say it now, and we'll say it at the end. We have yet to let people know how to order your book and get a hold of a copy. So please inform us of that, Sue, before we return to the beautiful info that you have all organized about this.
Oh, sure. I'd like to share that, of course. It can be obtained several ways. It is on sale in the gift shop at the Gage House in Fayetteville. I hope every listener gets a chance to tour the place. What we haven't mentioned is that Matilda was the mother-in-law of L. Frank Baum, who wrote all those 14 Oz books and more. Mm. Her daughter Maud married him in the parlor there. So there's a room that's called the Oz Room, and a Haudenosaunee Room, and an Underground Railroad Room, and a Women's History Room, because she was involved in so much. But I have copies, but also you can contact Author House, www.authorhouse.com. Who published my books. It's available on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble websites as well.
Mm-hmm. And I will say a little pitch here for anyone, being a writer myself and at time to time needing to promote the sale of books. If any of you hearing about this book are supporters of local independent bookstores, take this information about Sue's wonderful book to your independent bookstore, because I'm all about supporting those, and have them order it for you and stock this book. I will say, and I apologize that it didn't get done before the show, so at the moment there is no live link yet about which would connect you to Author House in particular, where you can order this, but that will be done first thing tomorrow. So podcast listeners, you should find that there is a link there. So good, and we'll make probably a quick reminder as we get. We're 3/4 of the way through this hour, and it always just speeds along. And a topic like this is all the more responsible for all of this. With the book itself, and I know there are a few very interesting parts of it in addition to the quotes of Matilda herself, would you like to talk about the wonderful people who are alive and well in this 21st century time who are connected with this book? I'm thinking about Kirsten Gillibrand in particular.
Yes, yes. those of you that are aware of our wonderful state senator, Kirsten Gillibrand, is quite a woman's advocate, and she works daily for different causes. I have an introduction to the book and a quote of hers, and some things that she has done is mentioned there. She has said, "Women have always blazed a path for the next generation to carry the torch farther." And Matilda was one of those women. I mentioned some of the others that came before Matilda that are little known, perhaps, and one that has certainly followed in her footsteps is Gloria Steinem. So her picture and her quote is also in the book. She has helped with fundraisers for the Gage Center and, of course, been editor at Ms. Magazine and written many books promoting women's causes. So those are the two I think you were referring to. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. Fabulous women, and both as well, of course, and we are so here in New York State, being a lifelong resident of the state, so delighted to have Kirsten Gillibrand as our state senator, and Gloria Steinem, who perhaps, and she is still doing so very much, but a very, very influential woman early in our lifetimes, the 1960s, 70s, and so forth, leading more beyond what was begun in the mid-century of 150-plus years ago. And I want to add just one quick story here from my own life, and that is when we think about women's right to vote, my grandmother was born in 1890, and she was raised on a farm, but by very kind of forward-thinking parents with her brother and sister, and they encouraged their two daughters and son to go as far as they could with their education or whatever their interests were. And she, as far as I have heard stories of her, and I knew her at least the first few years of my life, a very lively, engaged woman, and it always stunned me when I was made aware of the fact that this forward-thinking woman was 30 years old before she had the right to vote. And I know absolutely, I don't know if she was a suffragette. I almost think she may not have been. She was a young mother during those years. But to just think about that, that she was a 30-year-old before she was able to cast her ballot. So just wanted to include that because the importance of these women, we can, and so few lived to see the vote come about. And that just really, it touches you to know that they labored for something they didn't live to see. So that's my
little input. And this is why I'm so much of a proponent of teaching this history to our young girls now so that they know. But on another quote from Gage, she says that all gradual. Fear not any attempt to frown down the revolutions already commenced. Nothing is more fertile aid of reform than any attempt to check it. Work on. And that's what she did, even though it didn't look like it was going to happen the next day or the next week or the next year or in her lifetime. It's what these women did, and we can stand on their shoulders to carry the situation further.
Right.
Sometimes it goes back and forth like a pendulum. And that was pointed out to me by Betty Friedan years ago when I heard her in a speech that the swings back to being where we seem to, we have to start the battle all over again. Well, I actually don't like the war analogy, but, you know, the struggle perhaps. And that's what we're going through now again. We're in a period of that.
Yes. The pushback, whatever, and I agree with you about, I don't know how. I don't think it's particularly productive to put it on a war analogy. We have enough of that in the real-time kind of thing. Well, in looking over, because I there's time for one more call if indeed there is a person who'd like to call in with a comment or a question. So I'll invite you one last time for that. Let's see, where am I going? So, of all these lovely things that we have shared, what is calling to you, Sue, in this? This beautiful, her writings possibly. In the 10 or so, you know, less now, really minutes left, what would you like to get to that we have yet not talked too much about or at all, about this really amazing woman?
Well, there's a few more things I'd like to mention. I did want to point out that she also was a part-time painter and had other kinds of hobbies like that aren't even mentioned usually and aren't in the book. Oh, by the way, the book does have 23 photographs in it of people and historical pictures of her home and things like that. So that's, and even her grave in the Fayetteville Cemetery, which has this iconic quote on it, says, "There is a word sweeter than mother, home or heaven, and that word is liberty." And she felt so strongly about it, she had it put on her tomb, although she was cremated, which is, again, was something very different, wasn't very common back then. I also wanted to mention that she did all this research on ancient mother goddesses and was great at rebutting the debates that they would get into over whether women are fully human and would deserve the right to vote by talking about the history of religion from these early goddesses that were worshipped and were the ones that were the deities. It's just amazing to me, having studied these things myself, that she could dig up so much accurate information.
Right. In those days, wow, that's extraordinary, given my own draw to exactly the same thing. But now, as you mentioned this, and we've the title of her book, Women Church and State.
Woman,
Church and State. So that book is presently, I'm sure, available in terms of people wanting being able to buy a copy, or is it still in print or anything like that, or in a library, heaven forbid, that people go straight into a library and find it? But what other books, too, what other of her writings that you would suggest people avail themselves of? I mean, we have a person like yourself who has synthesized things in this wonderful book, but other writings of hers that you would suggest that people really wanted to do more looking into?
Well, her major opus was that book, The Woman, Church, and State, and it was out of print for a lot of years. Sally Roche Wagner worked to get an updated reprint, which is easier to read. I don't think it's in every library. In fact, a story about
it
that it was banned in the Fayetteville Library in her hometown because it taking over the church. But most of her writing is in speeches that she wrote and articles, and she was editor of the Citizen and Ballot Box newspaper for a while. She contributed articles to magazines back in her day, and she also diligently, for many years this took, to help write the history of women's suffrage that there were 4 volumes written in her lifetime and 2 more volumes added later. So all 3 of that triumvirate of Stanton and Anthony and Gage wrote for that. But it's really, even though Anthony took credit for a lot of it, it was Matilda that had the way with words and really did an abundance of the writing.
Oh. Well, this
it's,
is...
just a little anecdote. A friend of mine that's in my writing group said, oh, when I saw that picture of those books, I remember so distinctly them being on my mother's shelf when I was growing up, because she was a suffragist too, and those were just an icon in our home.
Oh, is terrific. Oh, it just is amazing. I having you willing and able to come and be a part of not just tonight, but within a month that we now call Women's History Month, it is just wonderful. I'm going to remind people once more, and again, for people listening in a podcast, you would see a link to the Author House site, but you have mentioned also, of course, that people can find this book through Barnes & Noble and Amazon, and I'm encouraging once more, have your independent bookseller get hold of this book and put it on their shelves. That's awfully, awfully important in my mind, and there's a wonderful bookstore in Binghamton owned and run by 2 beautiful women, so if you're near Binghamton, we're going to be sure this book gets there. So I'm going to invite you to add a closing thought, since we are moving to what inevitably is the end of our time together tonight.
And there's so much to say about this woman still, but when we were talking about the books, I do want to let you know that Sally Roche Wagner has written quite a few books about Matilda, of course, too. So people that are interested in her can also find those books available if they're wanting to pursue it.
Good. Well, that is fine.
I just want to mention she had some strong opinions about death, because she didn't really believe in it. She believed in reincarnation. She was different and ahead of her time in that aspect, too. And on marriage, that the vows be equal. Just a lot of other progressive ideas.
Do you have a favorite
quote? She was just ahead of her time.
Among...
They're not so strange now.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I'm thinking that. Wow. And so, you know, given that it is a book of wonderful quotes about her, is there one that, as you're looking at your notes or whatever, that you would like to share as our end point for this hour, and looking forward to expanding some of this in a later show?
Yes, if I can just find it here a second.
Okay. Take your time. We don't get cut off when the hour goes to the new. So then
okay.
I can tell you we're not going to get, like, shut down. We can extend. So feel free to
Let
to
me read this. Well, I know which one I'm looking for, but I can't find it. She wrote the Declaration of Rights of Women, and on the anniversary of 1776, and this was in 1876, and more or less saying that, let me read this one. No more momentous hour has arisen in the interest of freedom for the underlying principles of the Republic, its warp and woof alike, is the exact and permanent political equality of every citizen of the nation, whether that citizen is native-born or naturalized, white or black, man or woman. That's not the one I was looking for, but most of hers are very worth quoting.
Well, I know that people who have been hearing about this book tonight, listening to the podcast, will be recorded into in a very short time, that Quoting Matilda by Susan Savion is a book to seek out. I'm so delighted that you have joined me tonight and with the two callers that Julie and Cindy who added their voices in this Voices of the Earth. So thank you, Sue, for the work you've done to bring Matilda's voice to our ears and to our hearts, because we need this possibly even more than, well, still, and heaven knows it's something of a time, as you say, ahead of her time. So with that, a final time to say thank you for what you've done and for coming on the show today. You're very welcome.
Thank you.
So I am going to just bid you good night, do a little sign off as I like to do in ending the show, but last, have a good night, Sue, and we will be in touch. Thanks again. Take care.
Looking forward to seeing you again.
Absolutely. Bye-bye. Bye now. There we go. All right. Fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. Whoops, okay. Got your mic on still, Sue, but anyway. I think, okay. Sometimes I get to the end, and it's been, as it has been tonight, the most interesting, inspirational, exciting conversation, and it is a delightful thing that had come to me really a year ago, literally the March of 2014, the opportunity to bring to life this Voices of the Earth show in sharing with you listeners live tonight, listeners in podcast who have heard what Sue has had to share about Matilda Jocelyn Gage, a very important woman of her time, a very important woman of these times. These times demand so much of faith, of courage, of moving forward. It is through sharing our stories, such as Matilda's, through Sue, such as so many guests who have come before, that we are indeed bringing healing to what needs healing, bringing repair to the rib of Mother Earth that has been very sadly frayed in so many places. But I am hopeful as this year of 2015 continues to evolve. It is a marvelous time, moving to spring next week, and we will have another wonderful woman joining us, Kathleen Kelly. Having been on several shows last year, we will celebrate the vernal equinox. Do come see what that's all about as we celebrate spring. Thank you once more to my guest, Sue Savion. Thank you, listeners, for joining me tonight live, for listening podcast. Take good care, all of you. Namaste.
You've been listening to the Art of Living Well Radio Network, a subsidiary of Crowning Light Productions. For more information on all of our programs, go to our website, theartoflivingwell.tv. This is Gene Bogart saying thanks for listening to the Art of Living Well Radio Network. Radio to inspire enlightened living. Thank you.